Chapter 118. Georgie is made a gentleman. Georgie Osborne was now fairly established in his grandfather's mansion in Russell Square, occupant of his father's room in the house, and heir apparent of all the splendors there. The good looks, gallant bearing, and gentlemanlike appearance of the boy won the grandsire's heart for him. Mr. Osborne was as proud of him as ever he had been of the elder George. The child had many more luxuries and indulgences than had been awarded his father. Osborne's commerce had prospered greatly of late years. His wealth and importance in the city had very much increased. He had been glad enough in former days to put the elder George to a good private school, and a commission in the army for his son had been a source of no small pride to him. For little George and his future prospects, the old man looked much higher. He would make a gentleman of the little chap, was Mr. Osborne's constant saying regarding little Georgie. He saw him in his mind's eye, a collegian, a parliament man, a baronet, perhaps. The old man thought he would die contented if he could see his grandson in a fair way to such honors. He would have none but a tip-top college man to educate him. None of your quacks and pretenders, no, no. A few years before, he used to be savage and inveigh against all parsons, scholars, and the like, declaring that they were a pack of humbugs and quacks that weren't fit to get their living but by grinding Latin and Greek, and a set of supercilious dogs that pretended to look down upon British merchants and gentlemen who could buy up half a hundred of them. He would mourn now, in a very solemn manner, that his own education had been neglected, and repeatedly point out, in pompous orations to Georgie, the necessity and excellence of classical acquirements. When they met at dinner, the grandsire used to ask the lad what he had been reading during the day, and was greatly interested at the report the boy gave of his own studies, pretending to understand little George when he spoke regarding them. He made 100 blunders, and showed his ignorance many a time. It did not increase the respect which the child had for his senior. A quick brain and a better education elsewhere showed the boy very soon that his grandsire was a dullard, and he began accordingly to command him, and to look down upon him, for his previous education, humble and contracted as it had been, had made a much better gentleman of Georgie than any plans of his grandfather could make him. He had been brought up by a kind, weak, and tender woman, who had no pride about anything but about him, and whose heart was so pure, and whose bearing was so meek and humble that she could not but needs be a true lady. She busied herself in gentle offices and quiet duties. If she never said brilliant things, she never spoke or thought unkind ones. Guileless and artless, loving and pure, indeed how could our poor little Amelia be other than a real gentlewoman? Young Georgie lorded over this soft and yielding nature, and the contrast of its simplicity and delicacy with the coarse pomposity of the dull old man with whom he next came in contact made him lord over the latter two. If he had been a prince royal, he could not have been better brought up to think well of himself. Whilst his mother was yearning after him at home, and I do believe every hour of the day, and during most hours of the sad lonely nights, thinking of him, this young gentleman had a number of pleasures and consolations administered to him, which made him for his part bear the separation from Amelia very easily. Little boys who cry when they are going to school cry because they are going to a very uncomfortable place. It is only a few who weep from sheer affection. When you think that the eyes of your childhood dried at the sight of a piece of gingerbread, and that a plum cake was a compensation for the agony of parting with your mama and sisters, oh my friend and brother, you need not be too confident of your own fine feelings. Well then, Master George Osborne had every comfort and luxury that a wealthy and lavish old grandfather thought fit to provide. The coachman was instructed to purchase for him the handsomest pony which could be bought for money, and on this George was taught to ride, first at a riding school, whence, after having performed satisfactorily without stirrups, and over the leaping bar, he was conducted through the new road to Regent's Park, and then to Hyde Park, where he rode in state with Martin the coachman behind him. Old Osborne, who took matters more easily in the city now, where he left his affairs to his junior partners, would often ride out with Miss O in the same fashionable direction. As little Georgie came cantering up with his dandified air and his heels down, his grandfather would nudge the lads and say, "Look, Miss O." And he would laugh, and his face would grow red with pleasure, as he nodded out of the window to the boy, as the groom saluted the carriage, and the footman saluted Master George. Here to his aunt, Mrs. Frederick Bullock, whose chariot might daily be seen in the ring, with Bullocks emblazoned on the panels and harness, and three pasty-faced little Bullocks, covered with cockades and feathers, staring from the windows. "Mrs. Frederick Bullock," I say, flung glances of the bitterest hatred at the little upstart as he rode by with his hand on his side, and his hat on one ear, as proud as a lord. Though he was scarcely 11 years of age, Master George wore straps and the most beautiful little boots like a man. He had gilt spurs, and a gold-headed whip, and a fine pin in his handkerchief, and the neatest little kid gloves which Lamb's Conduit Street could furnish. His mother had given him a couple of neckcloths, and carefully hemmed, and made some little shirts for him. But when her ally came to see the widow, they were replaced by much finer linen. He had little jeweled buttons in the long shirt fronts. Her humble presents had been put aside. I believe Miss Osborne had given them to the coachman's boy. Amelia tried to think she was pleased at the change. Indeed, she was happy, and charmed to see the boy looking so beautiful. Yes, he had had a little black profile of him done for a shilling, and this was hung up by the side of another portrait over her bed. One day the boy came on his accustomed visit, galloping down the little street at Brompton, and bringing, as usual, all the inhabitants to the windows to admire his splendor, and with great eagerness and a look of triumph in his face, he pulled a case out of his great coat. It was a natty white great coat, with a cape and a velvet collar. Pulled out a red morocco case, which he gave her. "I bought it with my own money, Mama," he said. I thought you'd like it." Amelia opened the case, and giving a little cry of delighted affection, seized the boy, and embraced him 100 times. It was a miniature of himself, very prettily done, though not half handsome enough, we may be sure, the widow thought. His grandfather had wished to have a picture of him by an artist whose works, exhibited in a shop window, in Southampton Row, had caught the old gentleman's eye, and George, who had plenty of money, bethed him of asking the painter how much a copy of the little portrait would cost, saying that he would pay for it out of his own money, and that he wanted to give it to his mother. The pleased painter executed it for a small price, and old Osborne himself, when he heard of the incident, growled out his satisfaction, and gave the boy twice as many sovereigns as he paid for the miniature. But what was the grandfather's pleasure compared to Amelia's ecstasy? That proof of the boy's affection charmed her, so that she thought, no child in the world was like hers for goodness. For long weeks after, the thought of his love made her happy. She slept better with the picture under her pillow, and how many times did she kiss it, and weep and pray over it. A small kindness from those she loved made that timid heart grateful. Since her parting with George's, he had had no such joy and consolation. At his new home, Master George ruled like a lord. At dinner he invited the ladies to drink wine with the utmost coolness, and took off his champagne in a way which charmed his old grandfather. "Look at him," the old man would say, nudging his neighbor with a delighted purple face, "did you ever see such a chap? Lord, Lord! He'll be ordering a dressing case next, and razors to shave with. I'm blessed if he won't." The antics of the lad did not, however, delight Mr. Osborne's friends, so much as they pleased the old gentleman. It gave Mr. Justice Coffin no pleasure to hear Georgie cut into the conversation and spoil his stories. Colonel Fogey was not interested in seeing the little boy half tipsy. Mr. Sergeant Toffee's lady felt no particular gratitude, when, with a twist of his elbow, he tilted a glass of port wine over her yellow satin and laughed at the disaster. Nor was she better pleased, although old Osborne was highly delighted, when Georgie hopped her third boy, a young gentleman a year older than Georgie, and by chance home for the holidays from Dr. Tickless's at Ealing School, in Russell Square. George's grandfather gave the boy a couple of sovereigns for that feat and promised to reward him further for every boy above his own size, and each whom he whopped in a similar manner. It is difficult to say what good the old man saw in these combats. He had a vague notion that quarreling made boys hardy, and that tyranny was a useful accomplishment for them to learn. English youth have been so educated time out of mind, and we have hundreds of thousands of apologists and admirers of injustice, misery, and brutality as perpetrated among children. Flushed with praise and victory over Master Toffee, George wished naturally to pursue his conquests further, and one day as he was strutting about in prodigiously dandified new clothes, near St. Pancras, and a young baker's boy made sarcastic comments upon his appearance, the youthful patrician pulled off his dandy jacket with great spirit, and giving it in charge to the friend who accompanied him, Master Todd, of Great Coram Street, Russell Square, son of the junior partner of the House of Osborne and Company, George tried to whop the little baker. But the chances of war were unfavorable this time, and the little baker whopped Georgie, who came home with a rueful black eye, and all his fine shirt frill dabbled with the claret drawn from his own little nose. He told his grandfather that he had been in combat with a giant, and frightened his poor mother at Brompton with long, and by no means authentic, accounts of the battle. This young Todd, of Coram Street, Russell Square, was Master George's great friend and admirer. They both had a taste for painting theatrical characters, for hardbake and raspberry tarts, for sliding and skating in the Regent's Park and the Serpentine, when the weather permitted, for going to the play, whither they were often conducted, by Mr. Osborne's orders, by Rosen, Master George's appointed body servant, with whom they sat in great comfort in the pit. In the company of this gentleman they visited all the principal theaters of the metropolis, knew the names of all the actors from Drury Lane to Sadler's Wells, and performed, indeed, many of the plays to the Todd family and their youthful friends, with West's famous characters, on their pasteboard theater. Rosen, the footman, who was of a generous disposition, would not unfrequently, when in cash, treat his young master to oysters after the play, and to a glass of rum shrub for a nightcap. We may be pretty certain that Mr. Rosen profited in his turn by his young master's liberality and gratitude for the pleasures to which the footman inducted him. A famous tailor from the west end of the town, Mr. Osborne, would have none of your city or Holborn bunglers, he said, for the boy, though a city tailor was good enough for him, was summoned to ornament little George's person, and was told to spare no expense in so doing. So, Mr. Woolsey, of Conduit Street, gave a loose to his imagination, and sent the child home fancy trousers, fancy waistcoats, and fancy jackets enough to furnish a school of little dandies. Georgie had little white waistcoats for evening parties, and little cut velvet waistcoats for dinners, and a dear little darling shawl dressing gown, for all the world like a little man. He dressed for dinner every day, like a regular West End swell, as his grandfather remarked. One of the domestics was affected to his special service, attended him at his toilet, answered his bell, and brought him his letters always on a silver tray. Georgie, after breakfast, would sit in the armchair in the dining room and read the Morning Post, just like a grown-up man. "How he do damn and swear," the servants would cry, delighted at his precocity. Those who remembered the captain, his father, declared Master George was his pa, every inch of him. He made the house lively by his activity, his imperiousness, his scolding, and his good nature. George's education was confided to a neighboring scholar and private pedagogue who prepared young noblemen and gentlemen for the universities, the Senate, and the learned professions. whose system did not embrace the degrading corporal severity still practiced at the ancient places of education, and in whose family the pupils would find the elegances of refined society, and the confidence and affection of a home. It was in this way that the Reverend Lawrence Veale of Hart Street, Bloomsbury, and domestic chaplain to the Earl of Barrisers, strove with Mrs. Veale, his wife, to entice pupils. By thus advertising and pushing sedulously, the domestic chaplain and his lady generally succeeded in having one or two scholars by them who paid a high figure and were thought to be in uncommonly comfortable quarters. There was a large West Indian, whom nobody came to see, with a mahogany complexion, a woolly head, and an exceedingly dandified appearance. There was another hulking boy of 23 whose education had been neglected, and whom Mr. and Mrs. Veale were to introduce into the polite world. There were two sons of Colonel Bangles of the East India Company's service. These four sat down to dinner at Mrs. Veale's genteel board, when Georgie was introduced to her establishment. Georgie was, like some dozen other pupils, only a day boy. He arrived in the morning under the guardianship of his friend Mr. Rosen, and if it was fine, would ride away in the afternoon on his pony, followed by the groom. The wealth of his grandfather was reported in the school to be prodigious. The Rev. Mr. Veale used to compliment Georgie upon it personally, warning him that he was destined for a high station, that it became him to prepare, by sedulity and docility in youth, for the lofty duties to which he would be called in mature age, that obedience in the child was the best preparation for command in the man, and that he therefore begged George would not bring toffee into the school, and ruin the health of the master's Bangles, who had everything they wanted at the elegant and abundant table of Mrs. Veale. With respect to learning, the curriculum, as Mr. Veale loved to call it, was of prodigious extent, and the young gentleman in Hart Street might learn a something of every known science. The Rev. Mr. Veale had an orrery, an electrifying machine, a turning lathe, a theater in the wash house, a chemical apparatus, and what he called a select library of all the works of the best authors of ancient and modern times and languages. He took the boys to the British Museum, and descanted upon the antiquities and the specimens of natural history there, so that audiences would gather round him as he spoke, and all Bloomsbury highly admired him as a prodigiously well-informed man. And whenever he spoke, which he did almost always, he took care to produce the very finest and longest words, of which the vocabulary gave him the use, rightly judging that it was as cheap to employ a handsome, large, and sonorous epithet, as to use a little stingy one. Thus he would say to George in school, "I observed on my return home from taking the indulgence of an evening scientific conversation with my excellent friend Dr. Bulders, a true archaeologian, gentlemen, a true archaeologian, that the windows of your venerated grandfather's almost princely mansion in Russell Square were illuminated, as if for the purposes of festivity. Am I right in my conjecture that Mr. Osborne entertained a society of chosen spirits round his sumptuous board last night?" Little Georgie, who had considerable humor and used to mimic Mr. Veale to his face with great spirit and dexterity, would reply that Mr. Five was quite correct in his surmise. Then those friends who had the honor of partaking of Mr. Osborne's hospitality, gentlemen, had no reason, I will lay any wager, to complain of their repast. I myself have been more than once so favored. "By the way, Master Osborne, you came a little late this morning, and have been a defaulter in this respect more than once." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.